Tell me, what does Skyrim, Breath of the Wild, Shadow of Mordor, Minecraft, and Assassin's Creed all have in common? I mean, besides having an exceptionally sexy protagonist makes the undies drop around the world. And besides having more mods than you think possible and a lot of them having something to do with sex. No, the biggest thing that they all have in common is an open world. A land that you can travel basically infinitely in any direction, or vaguely infinitely in any direction. A land that is full of adventure and things to do. Kinda. I mean, mostly just collectibles and random encounters. But why do all these games and so many more have these things in common? Why are open worlds so normal? And how do they end up continually just being slop? This week, on Why Are You Talking About This? Nerd. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wait Hat Nerd. I'm your host, William, and I will be your guide through the vast and unfortunately empty plains of the open world. Trust me, you're going to have to make your own fun on this one. But before we get into it, I just want to thank you so much for listening. It means the world for my show to be beamed into your head like femboy propaganda. And yes, that's what we discussed at the last Queer Agenda meeting, amongst other things. And make sure you keep sharing the show with your friends, families, enemies, acquaintances, and whatever brand new phone numbers have been automatically added to your contact list. Because that's something that's happened to some people, apparently. But before we get into the show, I do have a really big update for you guys. This is going to be the last episode of this version of the show for a while. I know, it sucks, but the current form of Wait Hat and Nerd aren't really working very well, so I'm going to pivot into a different version of the show. A full explanation is going to be posted soon, but in the meantime, make sure to follow Winkashka and shop with Mystic Luna. They deserve the attention and help. Also, I'm recording this very late at night, so it's going to be kind of a quiet episode because office is close to the bedroom. But with that, we're on to the show. Alright, open world time. Let's start off by saying what an open world is. They're any kind of game where the player can approach the game in an open-ended style where there isn't much structure and the objectives can be beaten with free choice and in vaguely whatever order the player wants. They're non-linear and allow for free interaction and travel through the game world. But that doesn't mean that they're a sandbox. There's overlap, but not every open world is a sandbox. It's like rectangles and squares, but more autistic. The sandbox games focus more on creative efforts and oftentimes don't even have an objective. The other half of the secret sauce is create an open world. The other half of a secret sauce to create an open world game is called emergent gameplay, where the mechanics interact to create more complex reactions than what you would expect from the complexity of the mechanics. Oftentimes using things like procedural generation to achieve this, which is just using an algorithm instead of manually making every aspect of the game. For example, if you have a very simple hunger mechanic, where after a period of time the player needs to eat, and also have a mechanic where you need to go to each location at least once to fast travel, well, suddenly you've created a whole new aspect of gameplay by accident. Now people are playing Fallen Expeditions and plotting courses to hit supply refills. Now, to really get into the details of what open world games are, we should compare them to closed worlds, aka linear games. On the kind of pro side of open world games, we have sprawling worlds. Open world games have massive maps, ones that only get larger as computers and processors can handle more and more. So much so that some games like GTA V have an equivalent of 50 square miles fully mapped out, which is great for immersion and exploration. And we also have the emergent gameplay edge, allowing players to make their own fun. On the same notion, we also have emergent narratives, where stories can come from open worlds. Players get to pick their friends and allies, find unique interactions, and pick rivals, like Nazim, because everyone fucking hates that guy. Especially with the unfortunately now unusable Nemesis system from Shadow of Mordor, because Warner Bros. Refused to let anyone use the mechanic and they have the rights to it. It can also be as simple as, I'm going to make a city, and then the player fucking does it. Assuming your game has the freedom. Or you're playing a tabletop game and can make up the rules for that. Open worlds are also massively replayable, letting players visit and revisit the game over and over, and try out new paths, mechanics, and story elements. Players can do a variety of runs and try 1,000 different options. On the bad side, open world games tend to be really directionless. When you have so many options, what do? Having limitless options and no nudging, or very mild nudging in a direction very well might result in choice paralysis and reduce your player's agency instead of increasing it. Which, for people who like open worlds, might even be a feature and not a bug. But it'll probably cut people out who need some structure in their lives and get tiring pretty quick. And having an entirely directionless game is confusing. Like, imagine if you booted up a survival game and there were no online guides, no achievements, no end goal, and no tutorial. Just figure it out, fuckface, and that's it. Would you like playing that? And for how long? Also, a lot of open world games suffer from repetition and shallow gameplay. Gameplay loops tend to be pretty broad but lack depth, with emphasis on finding collectibles and defeating enemies that may or may not be reskins or reworks of other enemies. And this very simple design philosophy can make for a very boring and stale gameplay loop that you quickly get tired of. Added onto that is scope creep, which is that each time a new game is made or new features are added, there's another feature either everyone else needs to compete, or the more that you need to add in the future as they bray for more. Which means that over the years, the size and complexity of open world games continues to get bigger and with greater demand on a living, breathing, hot, and sexy world. Open worlds often suffer from being formulaic because of the combination, meaning that most games have a single formula for their genre that everyone else builds off of. Like how Minecraft was essentially the first survival open world, and GTA or Legend of Zelda were the first action-adventure open worlds, and everyone else has largely copied off of them. Same with Oblivion and Morrowind. Open worlds also suffer from some common things, like other aspects of the game suffering like mechanical fidelity, glitches and bugs, and performance issues. Open worlds also tend to lack important items and things that actually mean anything. And also, the story tends to suffer. If all these are true, open worlds often fall flat on their face and don't attract people, because it's very easy to make something vapid, broken, and empty, like the end of that one hentai I refused to read for obvious reasons. Closed world games, on the other hand, are focused and direct game experiences. You're able to plan everything out, meaning you have a more direct story, can choose when to introduce things, and how to balance the game. The mechanics can also be explicitly designed for the challenges of your characters, and you can guide players to solving them and down a specific path without worrying about them getting lost. You're also able to tailor the design of the game and create a domino effect of challenges and mechanics. Again, keeping the player's focus and attention and guiding them down the line of challenging gameplay loops. And you're also able to break the gameplay loop without cracking open the entire core concept of your game. Which, in turn, means you can make unique segments you can't really do in open worlds. Like having vehicle sections, or turret sections, or strategic command sections, or a button-mashing quick-time cunnilingus event, like Assassin's Creed 2 kind of did. That was a very weird part of the game, and also very awkward for your mom to walk in on you playing the game to. Of course, just like open Of course, just like with open worlds, there are drawbacks, like limited choice, because player choice can be extremely limited in closed worlds, which for some people is a massive turnoff and can also heavily limit how long they stay playing the game. Like, if you design a 40-hour closed world game, the most someone could ever play is 40 hours. And if you don't have many of any branching paths, then players may get bored of it quickly and eventually move on. There's also a few fallacies at play here, like the value per hour fallacy, where people are convinced there's a connection between the game size, price, and popularity. Meaning people assume they get more of a game if it's an hour per dollar, even if it's just padding. Which means that generally people want longer closed world games or open world games, which even if a shorter game would be a better experience. At the same time, closed world games also cause a detail obsession, since there's a very big jump in criticism of mechanics and art, meaning any glitches or failures become massive. And because quality demands are so high, even the smallest glitch or bad mechanic or bug can entirely ruin a game for someone. So overall, a closed world game is looking to create a narrative that carries their game, while open world games look to create immersion to carry their games. Which is like the difference between reading and writing a book, which is where a lot of these pros and cons come from. And from the player side, a closed world game removes a lot of the pressure to make choices, letting you just play and follow the story. While open world games have a lot of pressure to make choices, which can break the immersion with indecision or frustration. But they both have benefits, and which one you make your game will depend on what you want out of the experience for players. But before that, let's go to the history section. Alright, and we start way, way, way back in the ancient days. 1976. Which was 49 years ago, but you feel old now, don't you? I remember when it was 30 years ago. I was in high school. Anyways, the first free-roaming game that opened the door for open-world gaming, Colossal Cave, is released. Which, funnily enough, was your mom's nickname in high school. It's true, look it up. Anyways, 1984 was when the true first open-world game was released, called Elite. This game used procedural generation to create spaceships and planets, and while today it would be considered pretty primitive, for the time it was actually really advanced. But 2 years later, The Legend of Zelda, also focused on a non-linear storytelling theme and exploration, was released and became massively popular. Into the 90s, Pokemon arrives, and is one of the first open-world games most people can remember, allowing players to do what they want in any order that they want. And in 1998, Ocarina of Time brought open world games into 3D, which immensely increased the size of the worlds and also introduced side quests. In 2001, GTA 3 released as the precursor to the modern open world game. It was so popular and successful, and people loved the freedom so much that GTA 3 beat out Metal Gear Solid 2, Halo, and Super Smash Brothers, which, holy shit, that's impressive. In 2002 and 2006, Bethesda released Morrowind and Oblivion, and while these games are goofy, the power and size of their open worlds are impressive to this day. And this will quickly spread to other games and other genres, with a good number of open world games being released in the years after. Open-world racing games explode in popularity during this period. In 2009, Assassin's Creed 2 was released, making Assassin's Creed more of an open-world game before it became a fully open-world in later iterations. And finally, in 2011, we reached the open-world golden age, lasting until about 2020, and maybe a little after that, with some leeway all the way to today. With the release of Skyrim and Minecraft, we enter the time where open worlds are all over the place, and can't seem to lose. With GTA 5, Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor, Witcher 3, Breath of the Wild, Fallout 4, Kingdom Come Deliverance, and Red Dead Redemption 2, Death Stranding, and Ghost of Tsushima also marked the back half of the recent era. Even stuff like No Man's Sky getting repaired and being fucking amazing. But before we talk about good ways to design these games and what you can do, let's talk some meat and potatoes on why this matters. So, ultimately, talking about this matters because regardless of how you cut it, even in tabletop games and board games, players find this style extremely appealing. Open worlds are a lot of fun, and most people absolutely love them. It makes them feel like they're getting a lot out of the game, and their investment in it. A sense of freedom makes the game feel much, much larger than it actually is. And it appeals to all kinds of players. Like we discussed last episode. Explorers get to explore, killers and achievers get to find their niche little corner cases, and the socializers get to interact with literally everyone and everything. Open worlds let players make their own fun and find their own stories, and the popularity of the genre proves there's a huge, true hunger there. But a lot of game studios get the wrong idea about what it is players like about it. Looking at well-made ones, there's things to do. Like Minecraft with the achievements, Skyrim and Fallout 4 still have storylines, and Death Stranding, in addition to a storyline, has a massive social exploration and world-building aspect. There's cool shit just passively happening. And while not fully polished, they're at least decently good enough with the mechanics, and the glitches are more funny than they are horrific. Which is where a lot of games get things wrong. They add in the right elements, just willy-nilly without any real care put into it. They make massive maps, but with nothing happening in them, which creates soulless, boring games with no unique experiences or charm. Sure, having no fast travel could be cool, but the only cool things are in the city hexes, and you keep them dozens to hundreds away from each other. No one wants to walk that. Having collectibles can be fun, if they're mysterious, interesting, something players want to actually do. But if there's really nothing to them, or they're out-of-game things, no one cares. And a lot of unsuccessful open-world games don't get something else right, that being the story. Stories in open-world games can happen, main stories, and we can look at some of the most successful games in the genre to see how. Now, a personal favorite, like Shadow of Mordor, works because it has a storyline. One that is actually kind of weird and doesn't flow very well if you just mainline all the main game missions in a row. Because there's implied time that passes between scenes. Same with games like Skyrim. Sure, it flows decently, just mainlining, and they kind of push you in that direction, but the story is written in a way that players can go in any direction and hit these story beats whenever they want to. And the early ones are linear and expected to be done one right after the other in quick succession, because it's getting you used to the world. But games that don't do this make their story just stick out weirdly, and the open world aspects seem like they're just slapped on. Especially when role-playing, leadership, and side quest elements are added in. Because then it just makes the story feel even more out of place. But okay, let's talk about how to make an open world game. There's two good ways to look at designing an open world. You can either look at it like modules or like a quilt. In the modular form, you build the features of your world and then slot them into whatever you want, reasonably, while you make sure that they make sense. For the quilt form, you combine a patchwork of loosely defined and connected areas with their own adventures happening. Now, the second form allows you a bit more freedom and gives players the ability to travel a truly open world, as adventures are all over the place and there's open spaces to travel through. And also lets you make a very strong narrative that players can choose to interact with on their own time. And the first method allows you to have an easily traversable open world that has low stakes and low pressure, with the ability to create neat and compact stories within the game that don't overflow into the overworld. So you should choose one based on your style and story you're going for. For a game like Skyrim or your standard D&D game, the quilt method is probably better. Especially because a lot of what can be written beforehand, and if especially because a lot of that can be written beforehand, and if players get sidetracked, they can go do the thing and come back, and it feels like there's an impact. But for a game like GTA, or a game where the main story is linear, but you can go about it whenever, you should go with the modular method. Because you can place a little flags of, get more story here, for when players get tired of exploring and doing stuff, but don't want to be taken out of the story by their character being way different from the last installment. But there is a second way to do it, which is designing based on gameplay loops, where you essentially break down the game into different levels, scenarios, or adventures, and decide how you want players to solve it from there. And your choices are linear, non-linear, and a matrix method. A linear level has players following a set path, so there's an objective and a clear answer how to do it, and they don't progress until they do that. Non-linear has no set path to achieve the objective, and Matrix, which is the most commonly used in open world, is basically a grid system players need to go to in order to advance. But you can use all three in open world games, using points of interest in the game's core skill loop to give players along the story and also explore. And make sure you have at least 2 to 3 available to players at all times. So what does this mean? Well, what you do is first set up your world map in such a way where players can navigate to and are aware of those points of interest. Make the navigation test the player's skills in a different way from the other points of interest. Players check their skill against the navigation to get a challenge that is related to the skill it's testing, serving it as an escalation of the skill loop. When they finish, they've essentially shown their skill to the mechanic, and from that point of interest, have 2 or 3 more, with at least one being a higher level of the mechanic they just tested. In doing this, you can basically just populate the entire map and have a pretty interesting world. But, yeah, that's it. So let's get out of here. Alright, a simple, fast, and quiet episode. But hey, we need that sometimes. Anyways, if you have opinions, advice on how to make the show better, your favorite open worlds, why your hentai MMORPG needs an open world, no it fucking doesn't, and really anything else you want to tell me, make sure to email me at waytatpods@gmail.com. That's waytatpods@gmail.com. Remember to check out my other podcast, Waytat, where I do basically the same thing, but with stuff that's a lot less hopeful, honestly. And also, remember to follow me on Twitter at waytat_pods for more episode announcements. Have a good night, don't murder, have fun, and remember, even if your game doesn't have an open world, you do. This has been Why Aren't You Talking About This Nerd. I've been your host, William. Good night.